Muted.
Hello and welcome to the Wizz Air's results for the first quarter. For the first part of this call, all participants will be in a listen-only mode, and afterwards we'll have a question and answer session. Just to remind you, this conference call is being recorded. Today I'm pleased to present József Váradi, Chief Executive Officer, and Sonya Herrés, Chief Financial Officer. Please begin your meeting.
Good morning, everyone. This is József. Thank you for joining the call. Let me first give you some highlights of the report which was released this morning, and also some commentary on the state of the business and some expectations with regard to the future development. Well, we are reporting the October-December quarter with very strong results. Carried passengers grew by 20%. That's very significant, and actually it is at the higher end of the range versus our guidance. It was a profitable quarter. Profitability on an underlying basis somewhat came down. I will explain the reasons. On a statutory basis, we actually reported very strong profitability. We believe that we are in a changing revenue environment, and actually the current revenue environment favors the ULCC model and favors Wizz Air's position being one of the lowest cost producers in the industry, achieving one of the highest margins. And we believe that we are very well positioned to actually grow the business more aggressively for creating longer term value, business value, and longer term shareholder value. So we are taking a tactical platform, a tactical decision to actually drive capacity, grow more aggressively, in order to step change our market positions and deliver long-term value for the business. So that is also reflected in our guidance going forward for the balance of the financial year. We used to be guiding 18-20% capacity growth. Now we are guiding on 20%, which essentially is increasing capacity. That capacity commitment with the improvement of load factor, clearly strengthening our leadership position in the region, and we think this is the right time for such tactic. What we have done a number of times in our history, essentially, when you look at the industry, local carriers have changed their presence when the market environment was somewhat distressed. The cost performance of the business remains robust. We delivered cost ex-fuel flat in the period. Actually, we are guiding on some reduction of cost ex-fuel in the last quarter of the financial year. Now, this is to be noted that all that happened in significant headwind, pretty much driven by the exchange rate, the dollar-euro exchange rate, and also some operational disruptions driven by the weather conditions, severe weather conditions in Central East Europe. I will make some commentary on that later. We strengthened our balance sheet further, secured financing for essentially the remaining stream of AC-20, AC-21 CEO aircraft deliveries until the end of 2018. We also got awarded a concession for routes to the West Balkan countries by the Hungarian government. That's sort of a new territory for expansion for the business. Obviously, we are very excited about that. All in all, taking into account some of the headwinds the business is recently facing, we decided to trim profit guidance from midpoint to midpoint by 20 million euros to a new range of 225 to 235 million euros. Now, when you look at that 20 million gap, that's basically attributed by three major factors. 5 million euros is attributed by operational disruption-related matters. A few numbers. Just in January, so far, the last months, we had to cancel 80 flights. I mean, that's unprecedented. Last January, in the same period, we canceled 35 flights. And that was resulting, from the severe weather conditions in Central East Europe. Just today, the whole of the region is actually frozen. It's freezing rain there. So it's a very different winter this time around than what we went through last year and the year before. We spend much more on the icing, many more delays. The on-time performance of the whole industry is actually down significantly in January versus previous years, obviously resulting in much more cost to the business, and also some foregone revenues as those passengers who got cancelled had to be rebooked, jeopardizing the late booking abilities of the airline. So all in all, these factors attribute around 5 million to the overall shortfall. Another 5 million is attributed by the rising fuel price, the changing macro environment that's predominantly fuel-driven. I mean, you can see the fuel price today that's significantly higher than the fuel price a few months ago, and obviously despite the fact that we are well hedged, actually, for the last quarter, January-March, we are hedged 75%. We still got some exposure, and that exposure is reflected in that number. And then the remaining 10 million is attributed to the fare environment. We've always had the view that input costs feed through into the fare environment, but that happens over time, over a period of around 12 to 18 months, so that doesn't happen immediately. While the industry was benefiting from the drop of fuel price over the past 18 months or so, now you are seeing a reverse process when input costs are rising, but that will take time when capacity gets adjusted. And the yield environment will get moderated. So my expectation is that the pressure of overcapacity will be around not only this winter, but probably to some extent in summer as well. And it's really next winter, when winter 17-18, when you will start seeing significant moderation of capacity, and as a result, significant moderation of the fare environment. So that's the genuine capacity situation and yield commentary I would have. But I would also comment on Brexit. As we have previously noted, the issue we have post Brexit is the weak pound. We are a euro company. The pound has been down 15-20% year on year. Obviously, that creates a translation exposure when we work on the business in euro. Underlying terms, we remain very bullish about the UK business. We keep driving capacity by increasing capacity by 16% in the UK. And underlying terms, we are seeing no issues whatsoever. So we believe in the long-term prospect of the market, and we will keep growing capacity in the United Kingdom. But the pound issue is obviously impacting on our business. And I would move on to page three, which is just a snapshot on the business. At the moment, we are operating actually 75 aircraft, covering 133 airports in 40 countries. We've got 27 bases in operation. Obviously, with that growth, staff has grown to over 3,000 employees. And in the last quarter, we carried 5.7 million passengers. Well, on the right side, you can see the operational performance. I mean, I would really make comment on punctuality. I mean, punctuality is down year on year. This is not a unique phenomenon to Wizz. That's observed throughout the whole industry. Again, some of it is driven by the ATC environment, and a significant portion is driven by the weather this winter, which is much more severe than in previous winters. Moving on to page four, you see that we were expanding our network quite significantly. We opened up 37 routes to 21 countries in the period, and now it's a much extended network when we are slowly entering the summer season 2017. And as I said earlier, we are taking advantage of the situation, the market situation, and we are more aggressively pushing growth and capacity into the market because we think that we are best positioned for that, given the cost performance of the business and the margin performance of the company. Moving on to page four, this is what I already commented on. We won the concession from the Hungarian government, and as a result, we are going to connect Budapest with five West Balkan cities. which another source of growth for the company, for the business. And with that, I would hand over to Sonia, who will explain you the numbers and the performance of the business, and I will take it back in the end.
Okay, thank you, Joe. I'm going to present the quarter three financial results. Yet another strong quarter for us. In relation to the main KPIs, let me highlight the growth. In AEF's case, has increased 20.8%. Load factor reached 88.1%, which means 2.3 points better than last year. CASK was 3.16 eurocents, 7% lower than last year, mainly driven by fuel price reduction. Ex-fuel CASK stayed under control, same level as last year. Regarding unit revenues, RASK was 3.31 eurocents, decreased 9.4% due to fuel pass-through mainly, and ancillary revenue per pax per passenger went up 0.2 euros to 26.2 euros per passenger. Regarding group results, revenues went up 10%, and underlying profit was 13.5 million euros with a 3.9% margin, 1.6 points lower than last year. Net profit was 32.5 million euros with a difference of 19 million versus underlying profit. These differences of 19 million is in relation mainly to the time value of our open hedges. So moving to the revenue development, revenues increased, as I mentioned, 9.9%, close to 10%, to 341 million euros, split as follows: 2.5% increase in ticket and 21% increase in ancillary revenues. High load factor was reached, 81.1%, with 2.3 point increase compared to last year. And regarding the RASK, declined 9.4%, mainly driven by the capacity growth of close to 21%, fuel pass-through, and the weakness on the GDP, which is continuing. Turning to costs, total cost decreased 7% to 3.16 eurocents, split as follows. Fuel cost decreased 21.5% because of the reduction on the fuel prices, and there is no change regarding ex-fuel cost, which we keep under rigorous control despite the 7.2% appreciation of the dollar exchange rate. Just take into account that 46% of our cost base is US dollar denominated. Next, moving to next page, we can look at cash breakdown into more detail. You can see that the main factor behind the 7% cash decrease is fuel prices. The remaining items as a whole are at the same level as last year, but with some differences. On the one hand, better performance in both staff and airport handling costs, helped by capacity growth and the introduction of the 80-21s. And on the other hand, maintenance events increase our depreciation costs, and the appreciation of the dollar by 7.2% inflated our fleet costs. In regards to our cash position, we had 892 million euros cash at the end of quarter three, which over 647 million euros is free cash, compared with 580 million euros at the end of last year, which means 48% in terms of our revenues, so we continue delivering a very strong cash position. Looking at the leverage ratio, it was 1.5 compared to 1.4 last year, owing to the dollar appreciation. Let's see the hedging status. That was the number at 20th of January, but it's the same right now. On fuel, we have 65% of our needs for 16 hedge using zero-cost collars with an average of $3.91 to $4.69 per ton, and 42% of fiscal year 18 between $519 and $472 per ton. In relation to the euro-dollar exchange, we have 56% hedge between 1.12 and 1.08 for fiscal year 17, and for fiscal year 18, 46% hedge at levels between 1.10 and 1.12. Regarding sensitivities without hedging, a variation of $12 per ton in fuel has an impact of our accounts of $1.8 million in cost, and a movement of 1 cent in the euro-dollar exchange impact caused by 1.3 million euros. So that's the end of the financial numbers. Thank you for your attention. I will hand the presentation over to Joe again.
Thank you, Sonia. So I'm on the outlook slide, page 12. But overall, as you can see, we are using our business strengths in a weaker revenue environment to accelerate growth, we're going to be growing this business at a rate of around 20%, and this is something similar to what you can expect us to deliver in the coming financial year. I mean, we've got the capacity program for that year already, and we are doing it on the back of being one of the lowest cost producers in the industry, achieving one of the highest margins, and having a very strong balance sheet. And we believe by accelerating growth short-term, we deliver significant medium and long-term value for the business and shareholder value to our shareholders. With the guidance, with the new guidance, we are addressing the current headwinds we are seeing in the business. But I believe that the company is in great shape. The model is intact. Our cost control remains very rigorous and very much focused by the entire management team. You can see the results, and we are guiding on cost decline in the last quarter. We keep rolling out the AC21 program. By the end of fiscal 18, 33% of all seats will be flown on A321, so the A321s will start making a significant impact on the business. And let's just not forget that the A321 delivers 10% lower unit cost than the A320. And on that basis, we're seeing that we are very well positioned in the current weaker than expected revenue environment, and we are trying to take advantage of the situation as we have done it a number of times before. Thank you for listening to the presentation. So should you have any questions, we would be here to answer those.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you do wish to ask a question, please press 01 on your telephone keypad. If you want to withdraw the question, you can do so by pressing 02 to cancel. We'll have a brief pause while questions are being registered. The first question comes to the line of Michael Kunz from Société Générale. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Yes, good morning. A few questions from my side. Firstly, on US dollar and fuel, maybe a first idea what you would expect into next year, where the fuel bill is expected to go in absolute terms. Then on the pressure on unit revenues, understood that capacity growth in the CE region is accelerating. You are part of that, obviously. Competition is increasing as well. What have you seen, let's say, over the past few months in terms of capacity additions and what's your view, how that influenced the unit revenue outlook? Maybe on the CASK outlook, you're guiding for lower unit costs in the last quarter. You elaborated on the details in the last quarter. So maybe on the medium term outlook again, what further cost reductions should we look for? Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Well, with regard to the dollar and fuel, I mean, we don't really know what's going to happen to the market. I think there are all kinds of speculations which way FX could go or which way the fuel could go. But what I can tell you is that, we have a hedge policy in place, and that hedge policy covers 43% of our FX requirements for fiscal 18, and similar magnitude of our fuel requirements in the same period. So this is something what we have control over, but really we don't control the macro environment. But clearly what we are seeing is that the macro environment is changing to the worse, you know, from a European airline perspective. Significant impacts from changing input costs, especially the fuel environment is changing. And, you know, as the industry was benefiting from the drop of fuel price over the past 18 months because that pass-through, which we believe is happening, and actually this is empirically evidenced that it's happening, but it just takes time, 12 months to 18 months. But that time lag essentially had the industry make more money than before. But now I think we're going to be seeing a reversal of that process. So when input costs impact the business negatively, what we are just experiencing, the capacity is not going to move as quickly as input costs. So there is a time lag again, but that's a negative impact on profitability overall in the industry. My personal expectation is that you won't see much in the current winter period. I think it's just what it is. Summer is always the time an industry wants to make all the money. So summer is fairly inflexible to any kind of capacity adjustments. There might be some, but I don't think it's going to be major. So really, it's next winter 17-18, and you're going to see some more significant capacity moderation and changing of the yield environment. Well, with regard to our cost performance, well, we are guiding, and I think this is what we have always been guiding, on flat unit cost ex fuel, and I think we maintain that guidance. We have some drivers for lowering unit costs, but also we have some headwinds against unit costs. I mean, the drivers are obviously the overall cost control, growth, giving us the economy of scale. The A321, very importantly, and that's a very significant driver, reducing unit cost. But at the same time, you know, we have the strong dollar as a headwind. We have the changing inflationary pressure on labor, especially on pilots, typically on monopoly infrastructure costs. So on balance, so it's more like a wash. So really the question is, you know, how our cost performance relate to the competitive cost performance of other airlines, and we believe that actually we are going to improve our cost advantage going forward. Whether or not that translates into absolute unit cost decline, I mean, if we can achieve it, obviously we will do it, but we are guiding on pretty much flat performance ex fuel.
Great, thank you. Maybe one follow-up. Would you share with us what the currency effect on your unit revenues was in the third quarter?
Well, we don't really run this business on a constant currency basis because we just don't think that this is, you know, the way to manage it. But I mean, as you probably appreciate, it's around 2% of what we are talking about overall. But what you probably appreciate is that mostly this is driven by the weak pound. Post Brexit, the pound, you know, drop to 15-20% lower level than previously were to the euro, and as the pound is a significant portion in our revenue mix, obviously that affects the revenue performance of the business from a currency perspective, and overall that kind of translates into around a 2% negative impact.
Fantastic, thank you.
The next question comes from the line of Damian Brewer from RBC. Please go ahead, your line is now open.
Oh, hello, good morning everybody. Again, I have three questions, so apologies. First one, just if I could come back to sort of the theme of one of Michael's questions just before. Your incremental operating margin, or rather decremental, was nearly 20% in Q3, i.e. for each extra euro of revenues, you lost about 19-20 cents. Could you just elaborate a little bit more on what specifically you see in the market over the next 12 to 24 months that gives you confidence that making that investment will pay back in the medium term? For example, what's your views on the position of some of your competitors? If you're seeing these higher US dollar lease costs, you know, what does it do to them? How are you thinking about this tactically and strategically? The second question, just on the lease costs. Whilst the US dollar cost is rising, could you give us an update on what the implied interest or financing rate is on the operating leases you're writing at the moment? Just thinking that, you know, it's already come down post-IPO. Has there been any more progress? And then the very final question on the A321s. obviously reduces unit operating costs, but how do you think about them affecting the seasonal profitability of the business? Do you think in time it might make it more seasonally profitable in summer, but maybe less so in winter? Thank you very much.
Okay, let me start with the first one. You know, how we are seeing the competitive environment in light of the current revenue circumstances. Well, we're seeing that the industry is coming under some pressure with regard to financial performance. That's predominantly driven by overcapacity in the market. I mean, you can look at the U.S. what's going on there, and the U.S. is a much more disciplined market, it's a much more consolidated market, and still the industry over there is going through the same issue. And when you look at it here in Europe, it's a much more dispersed industry. So obviously, the impact can be even bigger. Well, we're seeing that. You know, within these circumstances, you know, this is an opportunity for us to actually do more and push more capacity and put more pressure on our competitors. You know, my expectation is that we're going to see competitive capacity being squeezed out. Even, you know, that would result in failures of airlines. You know, over the medium term, I don't think this is going to happen in summer, but especially post-summer, I mean, you know, some of the markets are really heated up, and I don't think that all of our competitors have, you know, the cost base to compete and have the liquidity to defend their business. So, you know, that could result in some market consolidation opportunities going into next winter. But it's very unpredictable, to be honest, because in Central and Eastern Europe, it's quite politically motivated. And, you know, you never know what kind of a creativity is applied to save the national carrier. But I think the prospect of national carriers will change even in the eyes of governments when it's a more severe macroeconomic environment versus a fairly benign fuel cost environment and interstate environment where we were like last year. So we shall see, but all in all, I believe that our push and our aggressive growth trajectory will squeeze capacity out of the market, especially in Central and Eastern Europe. So with regard to the A321 and its impact to seasonal profitability, you know, what we have been seeing so far is that the A321 has actually been expanding margins. Now, it's obviously delicate because on the one hand, you put more capacity to the market, so you put pressure on your own yields. It is a competitive vehicle as well, so we use the A321 very effectively to compete with other airlines, you know, just being able to deliver 10% lower cost than the AC20. So you need to take all those into account. But my view is that even if, you know, nothing happens to the overall margin performance, but we are able to deliver the business at 10% lower cost, I think we would be in a much stronger competitive position. So the AC21 is certainly a strategically important asset on hand from our perspective. But, you know, seasonal profitability, you might be right. I think the AC21 is going to make more profit in summer and potentially suffer more loss in winter, just given the sheer size of the aircraft. But overall, you know, looking at it on an annualized basis, I think the AC21, you know, delivers very intact financial performance. So far, it's a positive margin contributor. But obviously, I would take note that as we are rolling the program out, obviously, you know, that kind of a return will start diminishing. But again, even if it's kind of break-even from a profitability perspective, but delivers the business at 10% lower cost, you know, that just enables us to grow more or to be more competitive. Sonia, with regard to the lease?
Yes, so regarding to the lease, as I mentioned in my presentation on the CAS, you are seeing that we are having an increase in the lease cost exactly by 0.04 eurocents. This is mainly due to the macros, so to the FX impact. In fact, the FX impact is bigger than this. It's 6 million this quarter three. So without taking this into account, we don't like to do it because at the end we have to face it, but well, without this, we are having a unit cost on the lease decreasing, which is the expectation taking into account that we are adding the 80-21s. Regarding the opportunities, for the future. As Joe has mentioned at the beginning of the presentation, all the CEO CEOs has been already financed under sales and leaseback. The implicit interest rate is around 4%, so quite well compared with what we had years ago. And the idea with the NEO is to analyze further opportunities to still reduce more our lease costs, such as finance lease, issue bonds, whatever. So it's something that is still under analysis.
Thank you very much. Thank you for the very clear answers. Thank you.
The next question comes from the line of Andrew Light from Citigroup. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Oh, yeah, good morning. Two questions. First of all, going back a couple of years, you had a kind of look east strategy. I was just wondering if you see further opportunities now that that region has stabilized. I'm talking, you know, Russia, Central Asia, even Ukraine, and I understand there's a bit more liberalization in Russia. So you see opportunities there. And then secondly, there's airport privatization about to take place in Bulgaria. Is that a concern for you about potentially higher airport charges, and do you expect further privatizations in Eastern Europe? Thanks.
Thank you, Andrew. With regard to our sort of GoEast strategy, I think we have always been quite upbeat about that opportunity, and you know, we've actually done quite a lot. I mean, you know, opening a Ukrainian subsidiary, entering into a number of countries where you know we were the first low-cost carrier. At the same time, I think I also have to say that we have to be very measured, because clearly this geography is more exposed to various risks. A European Union country wouldn't be, you know, predominantly the geopolitics over there. I mean, as a result of that, you know, we had to seize the Ukrainian subsidy and turn that operation into a Wizz Air Hungary kind of a limited scope operation. But, you know, we keep monitoring the situation. Obviously, we are acting on the market opportunities. I mean, if I just mention two examples, we just established a base in Georgia, in Kutaisi, Georgia. That's a significant commitment to that GoEast strategy, and also we scaled up our Israeli Tel Aviv operation quite significantly over the past year or so, and we are looking for more opportunities there. I mean, Dubai is also scaled up, and now I think we are having 5 routes to Dubai. So we keep, you know, monitoring the situation there, but at the same time, I mean, you know, we had a bit of a setback in Egypt, we had a setback in Turkey, so we have to be very, very measured what we are prepared to do and what we are not prepared to do. But that's on the horizon, and it is actually pursued. Nevertheless, I think I would take GoEast still as a complementary layer of activities as opposed to being the core strategy of the airline. The core strategy of the airline remains connecting Central and Eastern Europe with the West on the one hand, and intra-Central and Eastern Europe more and more. We are developing quite a significant network now on an intra-Central and Eastern European basis. But whatever opportunities we have, east to east, we would pursue them, but more on a complementary basis. But airport privatization may be a risk, may be an opportunity. And I think we've seen examples of both. It can lead to higher airport charges, but also it can lead to a more efficient operating model, and long-term efficiency actually could help us drive our business there. If you look at Budapest Airport, for example, it used to be a state-owned airport. It got privatized 7-8 years ago, and it is one of our largest bases now, and I think we've got a very strong cooperation between the airline and the airport, enabling our growth, you know, from a commercial perspective as well as from an operational perspective. So it can go either way. I mean, we are seeing a number of airports in Central and Eastern Europe that got privatized before, and they are so expensive and so much overcharging that they limit our ability to get in. I think one airport I could mention is Tirana in Albania. That's a high charge airport, pretty much limiting local carrier development at that airport. But you know, over time that can change. I mean, we have also seen that you know, a bad start is not necessarily a bad finish, and those airports actually may evolve. So I think it's a mixed bag, all in all.
Okay, thank you very much.
The next question comes from the line of Mark Simpson from Goodbody. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Yeah, thanks. Morning, Joseph, Sonia. Just a couple of questions. Just want to, on the ownership cost, we've covered the leasing, but depreciation and maintenance, if you look at the Q2 unit costs, they were down 3% year-on-year. Q3, they're up 13% year-on-year. Again, I don't know if that's FX in the main, but I wonder if you could just comment on that. And I know there's been a shift in where costs are allocated with regards to maintenance, so I wonder if you could just take us through that. Nice, easy one. Can you just remind us the net sterling exposure, percent of total revenues, percent of costs? And then on the A321, Joseph, you just mentioned 10% unit cost win. You have, I think, bettered that and been up to 14%. I just wonder if you could just comment on your current experience and run rate on the A321 against the A320. And then finally, what's the step up in improved efficiency you anticipate between the current A321 and the NEOs due in 2019?
Okay, let me start with the A321 and A321neo, and I would pass it over to the finance guys on ownership. So with regard to the A321, yes, I mean, we've seen some route performance on 14%, but, you know, and actually we are seeing that, but, you know, that also includes the fuel price impact. So if you neutralize it and you kind of compare Apple to Apple on a constant currency constant price basis, it is more 10%. So we got a bit of an inflation with the 14%. It was just reflective also the fuel price development. I think, you know, from a planning perspective, I think I would just be relying on the 10% number. With regard to the NEO, that's another 10%. So if you want to put it very simply, so moving from AC20 to AC21CO is 10%, and moving from AC21CO to AC21NEO is another 10%. It may be a little more than that, but we would just be planning on AC on 10%, as we don't have operational experience yet as ownership.
Yeah, regarding ownership, so it's very important to take into account both maintenance and depreciation. Take into account that our heavy events are included in the depreciation line partially and also in the maintenance. So if you're seeing all together, it's difficult to see the same trend, because the maintenance events are having based on the maintenance program. So it's true that in quarter three we are having more events, and that's the reason why the depreciation went up.
So Mark, a little bit more colour. It seemed like there was a lot of birds flying around in Q3, so we had a lot more issues with our engines. So in terms of events on the engines, it was twice that. So we had about 25 events in Q3 versus a quarter in fiscal 16. So that basically is one of the reasons. There's a lot more engines that came off wing and needed maintenance, and traditionally do the maintenance. You know, when they come off wing, there's less flying in the winter anyway, so that's when you tend to do a lot of the events. So that was one of the drivers, a lot more bird strikes for some reason. No particular trend, no particular airport. It just happened across the network.
Okay, to that. And then finally, just the net GBP revenue and cost percent of totals.
So the revenue, again, it's no real change. We were planning to grow a bit aggressively, but it's the same as last year. So the cost side around about 8%, the revenue side 20%. 30% of the sales is UK, but 10% of the 30% is on the other end.
Fine. Okay, that's great. Thanks for those.
The next question comes from the line of Chris Bay from JP Morgan. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Yeah, hi, it's Chris Combe here. Just following up on the Sterling theme, can you update us on the UK strategy since the pivot away referendum? Are you contemplating any changes, or are you happy with the initial take? And then second, just a housekeeping question. How should we think about the benefit of Easter in fiscal 18 and also the fact that we're going to split between Orthodox and Catholic Easter? Thank you.
Okay, with regard to the UK strategy, so as said, we as a business remain very positive on the outlook and prospects of the UK market. If you look at the business underlying terms, pound-based revenue performance has been improving. The issue we have is the translation of the pound into euro, and this is why we were making some adjustments to capacity. Nevertheless, you know, we keep growing this market by 16%, and I think you will see us growing going forward as well. So with that regard, I don't think anything has changed to our strategy. Actually, we quite look forward to some further opportunities in the UK market. if your question is, you know, what we could expect from the regulatory environment, you know, post hard Brexit, based on what politicians have announced to the public, I think the big question here is the European single sky system, to what extent and how or how not the UK will be party to that regime. I mean, if you kind of skim through how that regime has been assembled so far, so you have basically the European Union component, and you have a number of satellite countries lined up to the program. But the basis of that arrangement might differ country by country. Actually, we are seeing a number of executions. So depending on how that process is going to play out, my expectation personally is that the UK will be party to the regime through a kind of an arrangement. Probably it will be a bilateral arrangement. So my expectation would be that actually between the European Union and the UK there will be an open market. There may not be an open market between the UK and non-EU members, even if they are party to the regime. But I think that's something to be seen. So we are looking at a number of scenarios internally, and you know, we are action planning those scenarios, even including possibly to set up a UK AOC if we have to do it. But again, I think what I can tell you at this point in time is that you know, our UK business is doing fine, underlying terms very well. Some issues, short-term issues on the pound translation, and we are a committed long-term player to the UK market. And depending how the situation is going on forward with regard to Brexit, we will take the necessary actions.
So in relation to the Easter effect in fiscal year 18, so as you know, in this fiscal 17, we have been able to have any Easter, but we can benefit of almost one and a half Easter in our fiscal year 18, and the assumption is that has a positive impact on our accounts of almost 14 million euros on revenues.
That's clear. Thank you.
The next question comes in line of James Goodall from Redburn. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Hi, everyone. Just one quick one from me. Just given your commentary on tactically growing more aggressively and effectively diluting your own yields, I'd just like to get a better understanding of how you're approaching your capacity growth for this summer in terms of the pricing declines that you're willing to accept. I mean, do you see the current levels of unit revenue deflation this winter as an acceptable level for the summer? Cheers.
I mean, we cannot predict the revenue environment, obviously, but based on what we are seeing in terms of capacity out there from airlines, I think there is going to be some continuing pressure on the yield environment. But we don't have visibility on bookings yet. I mean, you know, we have very limited bookings this time of the year with regard to the summer program, so I cannot really comment on that. But you know, I'm quite confident that our tactical enhanced growth strategy is going to bear the fruits. I mean, you know, we've seen that happening a number of times when, in a somewhat distressed revenue environment, we were growing more, and you know, that growth was manifesting into more value and more profitability over time through maturity. I would even say that, you know, what we are growing already this winter, you know, we yield some benefits to the airline in summer, because we're going to see some maturity flowing through the network already at that time. So, you know, I think we are well positioned in this industry. I think pressure will be there on the yield environment short term, I think throughout summer. And it's really winter when you're going to start seeing some ease of the pressure as airlines will start changing their capacity plans and will start moderating overall capacity in the market. And as a result, I think there will be some improvement of the yield environment.
Perfect. Thank you. And then just a quick follow-up on what you're expecting for winter with the moderation in capacity. Does that mean you're expecting, given the deflation that we've seen this year, for actually there's the chance of positive pricing next winter?
Yeah, possibly. I mean, you know, if input costs rise and capacity becomes rationalized, yeah, I think you're going to see yield increase.
Perfect. Thank you very much.
The next question comes from the line of Andrew Lobbenberg from HSBC. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Oh, hi there. Can I ask about cash, big pile of cash building on the balance sheet? Obviously, the ownership structure is not naturally drawing you towards dividends, but at what time do you think about managing or optimizing the cash, because it's presumably not earning a great deal in the bank? Secondly, just slightly returning to the discussion you just had about the growth rate, is it right to understand that looking to winter 17-18, when you think the industry might be moderating its capacity, is your approach of pushing on with your growth, does that mean that you would not moderate your capacity in 17-18? And then just a final question on the strategic uncertainty that's playing out with the Etihad related businesses in Alitalia and Air Berlin. Are there opportunities for you into those markets as a result of the instability in these businesses?
Okay, thank you. Well, with regard to winter capacity, fiscal 17-18, I think we're going to be able to take advantage of our strengths, our cost production, our margin performance, and our balance sheet strengths vis-a-vis most of our competitors. So I think capacity moderation should be happening more on the competition side than on our side. So I think we are much better placed strategically actually to compete and win within a bit more stressful environment than our competitors. So this is why we are enhancing our growth plan. I mean, we wanna squeeze competitive capacity out of the market and take that capacity opportunity over for our business. So I think that will continue into winter fiscal 17-18, but against a different backdrop of competitive capacity versus what we are seeing at this point in time. Well, with regard to the Etihad-related airlines, I mean, obviously we don't know what's going to happen to Etihad's investments in Europe, but we are growing in Germany, we are growing in Serbia, we are growing in Italy, irrespective of what happens to these businesses, and certainly should there be any significant change there, I mean, we would assess the opportunities. But even without that, we are quite aggressively growing, double-digit growing in each of these markets.
Yeah, sure. Regarding the cash, you are completely right. So right now, the big numbers, we have 850 million euros in cash. That means something like 50% of our revenues. If you take into account that we think that 30% has to be the working cash needed, that seems that something around 400 million euros is like free cash, no? That we can use for other investments. But two things to take into account. First, we have a big order in place, 210 A321s coming from 2019. So we have to be very careful on what will be the financing that we have to take in place. Taking into account that finally we decided to go on finance leases or balance sheet financing, we have to put some equity in place. It can be 20%, can be 30%. So we think we are not yet ready to make this decision. It's something that is still an analysis. I agree with you that so far, taking into account that the yield coming from cash, it's pretty zero or even negative. This is something that we have to address.
The next question comes from the line of Ross Harvey from Davy. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Hi, good morning. I have two quick questions, please. First of all, on your capacity plans for 2018, I know you said, Joseph, that the company will continue to grow strongly next year. What currently is the plan around increasing frequencies, new airports, new destinations? I know that in H1, new airports and new destinations made up more of the growth than they did in prior years. And secondly, you might talk about the outlook on ancillaries into 2018, what impact the A321 has had on the ancillary momentum, and just what the likes of the Discount Club increase in membership can do into next year. Thanks.
Thank you. With regard to delivering growth, I think we are seeing around a 75% of the gross capacity going into increasing frequencies on existing services or joining dots, joining existing airports in the system, so kind of relying on an established network, and 25% of the capacity, of the gross capacity, is being deployed in new markets, new airports, new territories. I think that pattern will continue to be happening. I don't think this is sacred, so we don't have a target here. This is just what we kind of end up with. And the shift, I think, over the years, has been that in the early stage, obviously, we were very keen on planting the flags of low cost in different markets, in different regions. And once we created a skeleton of network, we started putting meat on the bone. And this is where we are. We are flying over 130 airports in 40 countries through a route network of over 500 routes. So this is a huge skeleton what we have, and if you look at the average frequency per week, it's around 5, which is the lowest compared to any other airlines in Europe, even LCCs. So there is a way to go in terms of enhancing our existing services. Now, some of it is obviously function of the market, that we just don't have those trunk routes, those passenger flows, what you find in Western Europe. But also some of it is kind of a deliberate choice that, we've been very keen on expanding the business and diversifying the business in a big way. But now as it is sort of delivered, we are going to deepen the network of the airline, and we are going to put more substance into the markets to increase our competitive strength there. But at the same time, we remain very excited about new market opportunities, so we deliberately want to allocate some of our growth capacity to finding new markets, new homes, building new regions for locals, pioneering that approach in Central and Eastern Europe. And with regard to ancillary revenues, vis-à-vis the A321 operation, I don't think we are seeing a significant relationship between the A321 ancillary revenues either way, neither positive nor negative. Ancillary revenue production is much of the function of passengers we carry. So the volume of passengers on the one hand is driving ancillary revenues, and the sorts of initiatives what we are taking is the other driver, but not really the aircraft type what we are operating. We are expecting ancillary revenues to continue to build up on a per passenger basis. Previously we've been guiding a euro per passenger. Now we are not achieving that euro per passenger annual growth. We are achieving more like half a euro per passenger, and that's really on the drop of bag-related charges. I think at one point it will kind of hit the bottom and will not drop any further. I mean, we've seen some decline of bag-related charges over the past 2 years. I mean, obviously when people have to pay for something, they start sinking. So I think there's a bit of an educational process happening there, but also as our network is deepening, as we just discussed, our network becomes more and more appealing to business travelers. So the portion of business travelers is increasing in our network. So as a result, bags are getting less and less coming to the aircraft. But at the same time, we try to offset this decline through the development of new initiatives and the enhancement of existing initiatives, with discount for being one of the most important ones. But we have been quite aggressively building the franchise, getting to over a million members. We're going to keep pushing it. I think you will see us delivering more and more in terms of membership, and also we are going to further sophisticate the program, and we are expecting the program to deliver actually more. So I think expect us to deliver another half a euro or so in terms of incremental ancillary revenue per passenger going forward. This will remain strategic for the business, and we will continue to develop initiatives around that revenue generation stream.
Thank you very much.
The next question comes from the line of Oliver Sleeth from Barclays. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Yes, morning everyone. Just three from me, but I'll try and keep it brief. Just firstly, on the pricing environment this winter, Are you noticing any difference at all between countries or regions, any areas you're seeing particular pressure on pricing? For example, I know there's a lot of capacity going into Bulgaria through this winter, or is it quite similar across the board? Second question, just on your fleet plan. I noticed, I think the last time you gave us an update on the longer-term fleet plan was at the back in November, when you were expecting 93 aircraft in total by the end of FY18. I just wondered if you could share what in the fleet plan it looks like at the moment in terms of total aircraft in FY19, and do you have flexibility within that still, if you wanted to change the mix slightly between A320s and A321s within that? And finally, just wanted any update on the search for a new CFO. Thank you.
I think if you look at the pricing environment, a significant factor, as I just said at the beginning, is the British pound. And again, pound terms, we are doing very well. In the UK, euro terms, obviously there is some stress flowing through into the revenue line. So I think if I would want to pick one significant impact, I think that's the UK. With that regard, the pricing environment in other markets is predominantly driven by the capacity situation. I'm sure you probably are tracking it yourself, that very significant capacity increase is happening in Bulgaria. Obviously, that is dragging the years down. But this is always a short-term phenomenon. I think we've gone through this exercise a number of times in Hungary, in Poland, in the Baltic states. So there is some revenue distress for a year or so. So either the increased capacity sucks up the market and stimulates the demand, or capacity gets moderated to be in line with demand after a year or so. So I don't think we are seeing anything new here. We've seen this a number of times, and I presume that we're going to see it in the future as well. So I think it's kind of a temporary bump on the road. So the bigger the capacity increases in the market, the more stress you're going to see in the year environment. But over a year or so, it will get moderated. With regard to the fleet plan, by fiscal 18, we're going to be ending up with 93 aircraft. Fiscal 19, we're going to be ending up with 106 aircraft. A new CFO search, that's on the way. Sonia is with us until mid-March as a fully functioning CFO. And, the search is going. We are looking at internal options. We are looking at external options. And the board is going to look at these options, and we determine who the next CFO should be. I cannot give you a timing here, but my expectation is that within the course of the next 2 months, I think we should have some clarity here.
Thanks very much, and good luck to Sonia.
Thank you.
As there are no further questions at this point, I'll return the conference to the speakers for any closing comments.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for your interest. I know that that's never a good place to come back to the market and report some declines on expectations, but I would want to assure you that this business is very intact. It's well positioned for structural wins. We control our cost. We are one of the best cost performers in the industry, and we are achieving one of the highest margins in the industry, and we're seeing that this is a good time with regard to the circumstances to push more growth aggressively into the market to create medium long-term shareholder value, even if it comes to some extent with some short-term financial stress. But talking about the magnitude of that, this business is still delivering 14.7% underlying net profit margin in the current financial year. You may recall that we have been guiding the market structurally on 15% growth, 15% margin. I think we are in that range. You may be a little above, a little below that. I think over the past year or two, we were a little above that. Now we are a little behind that. But at the same time, we are accelerating growth, and that acceleration will lead into medium, long-term shareholder value creation. Thank you very much for your interest.
This now concludes our conference call. Thank you all for attending. You may now disconnect your line.